This summer, your local movie theater will become a tent revival for proclaiming Jesus, and you're invited to be a part of this unique evangelistic campaign. Join with believers nationwide for the Million Souls Campaign to bring unsaved family and friends to watch the powerful new movie, The Firing Squad, starring Kevin Sorbo and Cuba Gooding Jr. The Firing Squad tells the incredible true story about prisoners who find faith in the face of execution and transform their prison in the process. As the movie ends, co-star Kevin Sorbo comes on the screen to lead the entire theater in a prayer to commit one's life to Jesus Christ, providing an on-site opportunity to introduce family and friends to the message of Jesus. Go to firingsquadfilm.com and learn how you can receive free tickets and more to The Firing Squad and participate in this unique theater event. Bring your friends and your family and bring your faith. That's firingsquadfilm.com to learn more.
Hey, it's a great Tuesday podcast. Everything you need to know from campus terror. I shouldn't say that. It was a mostly peaceful demonstration yesterday on the campuses of America. There's one campus that is really standing out as, I don't know, the right way to deal with this. It's the University of Florida. We talk about that. Also, Spielberg and OnlyFans doing propaganda for the Biden administration. Also, we talk about the baptism of Russell Brand, Bishop Marmari from Australia. Stephen Hicks joins us for 45 minutes just on the podcast that Tucker Carlson did with Alexander Dugan that came out yesterday. It's an important follow-up to that interview. If you haven't watched it, you should. You'll see how charming he is. But now, part one of who really is Alexander Dugan on today. Also, kind of an update on the NPR CEO. Is she a color revolutionary? So much to talk about on today's podcast. When frequent pain has you back up against the ropes, it's time to come out swinging. When I was dealing with some of the worst pain in my life, that meant taking Relief Factor. Relief Factor helped me get my life back. And I've heard stories from people who had the same experience, but I had taken everything and I had really given up. Please do yourself a big favor and just try this. It's not a drug. It's a daily supplement. It helps your body fight pain by fighting inflammation. It's 100% drug-free. Over a million people have tried Relief Factor's Quick Start Kit. 70% of them have gone on to order it again. It helps reduce or eliminate your aches and pains that you're experiencing. Relief Factor can help you maybe feel better. About 70% of the people who try it go on to order more. So it doesn't work for everybody, but that's why they have a 3-week quick start kit. Take it as directed for 3 weeks. You'll see the difference. 1-800-4-RELIEF. 1-800-4-RELIEF. ReliefFactor.com.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I want to welcome to the program. It's always an honor to talk to him. Rockford University philosophy professor, Center for Ethics and Entrepreneurship executive director, Stephen Hicks. Hello, Stephen. How are you, sir?
I am very well. Thanks for having me on again, Glenn.
You bet. So I watched this interview, and I know that Tucker didn't know who he was, Alexander Dugan, because when he was over there, I said, be careful if you're involved with Alexander Dugan. And that, unfortunately, I said that right before he left. So he had already done the interview and he said, not really sure about this guy. And I don't think really had done his homework because it came up last minute. But also, Dugan is hard to nail down if you just look at him on the surface. Would you agree with that?
Well, sure. TV interviewers will often underprepare, and they don't necessarily have the philosophical and strategic depth to understand. And as you were suggesting, Dugan is a slippery character. At the same time, he is deep. He is a philosopher as well as being a strategist. But at the same time, I don't want to let someone like Tucker Carlson off the hook, because we do have enough historical knowledge about the kinds of positions that Dugan is offering. He is repackaging ideas and strategies that have been well worked over in the 20th century. And so we should be up to speed on that. And so I think partly what we need is a little philosophical upbrushing, but also some historical reminders of history repeating itself.
So let me play just a little bit of what he said to Tucker yesterday, and we'll start there. Here's a clip from the Tucker Carlson interview with Alexander Dugin.
And after the fall of the Soviet Union, there was only liberalism. And Francis Fukuyama has pointed out correctly that there are no more any ideologies except of liberalism. And liberalism, that was liberation of this individual from any kind of collective identity. There were only two collective identities to liberate from: gender identity, because it is collective identity. You are man or woman collectively, so you could not be alone. A liberation from gender, and that has led to transgenders, to LGBT, and new form of sexual individualism. So sex is something optional. And that was not just deviation of liberalism. That was necessary elements of implementation and the victory of this liberal ideology. And the last step that is not yet totally made is liberation from human identity, humanity optional. And when now we are choosing, or you in the West, you are choosing the sex you want, as you want. And the last step in this process of liberalism, implementation of liberalism, will mean precisely the human optional. So you can choose your individual identity to be human, not to be human. And that has a name: transhumanism, posthumanism, singularity, artificial intelligence, Klaus Schwab, Kurzweil, or Harari. They openly declare that is inevitable future of humanity. So we arrive to the historical terminal station that we finally, five centuries ago, we have embarked in this train, and now we're arriving at the last station.
So what he's saying here is that liberalism, meaning the classic liberalism where you're an individual, it's not collective, et cetera, et cetera. He says the inevitable end is progressivism and then some dystopian future. But I don't think that's right. I'd love to hear from you. Liberalism doesn't lead to progressivism. Marxism leads to progressivism.
Yeah. The first half of the Dugin clip, I think, is correct. The second half is a massive equivocation. I think philosophically he should know better. I think he's doing some tactical rhetoric against the West in talking about the transgenderism. So let's take those two in part. So first part is fall of the Soviet Union. I think Dugin is exactly right that what played out in the 20th century left only some sort of liberalism standing in the field. The 20th century was a huge ideological battle. I think Dugin's analysis is correct. It's the kind of analysis I've argued and many other people have argued as well. The 20th century was about some sort of liberalism versus some sort of fascism or national socialism versus some sort of Marxist communism. We fought world wars. We fought cold wars. We fought many trench warfare, ideological wars as well. What happened was fascism was defeated, national socialism was defeated, and by 1991, Marxist communism was defeated. And so what seemed to be almost inevitable, I don't want to use the inevitability language, but was that some sort of liberal democracy, capitalism, individualism, modernity was triumphant. So I think that part is exactly right. Now, where I think Dugin goes wrong is in the what happens next. My view is that what happened was that liberalism took a breather. We've been fighting wars, ideological and actual wars, for over a century. We let our guard down. We relaxed. We kind of thought everybody is going to get on board, and some sort of liberal, democratic, capitalist modern future is slowly then going to prevail over the next generation. Now, what actually happened, though, was that the fascists, the national socialists, the authoritarians, the communists, the Marxists of various sorts did not simply go away and give up the fight. Instead, they started to repackage themselves And then inside the now triumphant West, there were counter movements that started to reassert themselves. And then we started to see then by the time we get to 2010, 2015 or so, that those counter Western movements inside the West are reasserting themselves and everybody starts to become aware of them. And the particularly nasty forms of transgenderism, and I think there is a legitimate version of transgenderism that reasonable and sensitive people will take aware of, but weaponized transgenderism of the particularly violent form that we're sometimes dealing with, that is a different phenomenon. So the second part then is what Dugin wants to do is to say, and this is the part that you're picking up on, that the relativism, the angry activism, the willingness to let everything burn inside the West that we're now confronting with, the virulent forms of Islamism that we are now confronting and so on, the total package of anti-Western, anti-liberalisms, where did those come from? Now, I agree those are pathological, they are very destructive, but what Dugin is offering is a thesis that says that those anti-liberalisms are themselves an outgrowth of liberalism, and that I think is simply false.
So when he says, you know, an end to modernity and liberalism, he's actually, I mean, one of the first things I found about Dugin that opened my eyes was his statement that that fascism with Mussolini, he says, was a very brave person, as was Hitler, but it didn't work. But they understood that international communism was not good. So they went for national communism or socialism, which became fascist. And he said where the two of them went wrong was they offered too many compromises.
Exactly.
He said the future, yeah, the future is fascism without compromise.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a little terrifying.
So this is 1990s Dugin in the first decade after the fall of the Soviet Union. And he's a strange character right at this point. He's already adopted various forms of Nazism in the 1980s. And at this point, he's not a young man. He's in his late 20s. He's in his early 30s. So he's a mature thinker. He hates liberalism already. He hates modernity. He hates the West in its entirety. At the same time, he's dissatisfied with a lot of what's going on in the Soviet Union, its version of communism and Marxism. When the Soviet Union falls, though, he is co-founder of a National Bolshevik Party. And the Bolsheviks, of course, were Lenin, Stalin, Trotsky, and so on. So it's a reworking of a kind of communist Marxism, but the nationalism is important there for him. And he then, within a few years, settles on saying what we need to do is just rework fascism. So he is widely and explicitly admiring of Mussolini and some of the German fascists the 1920s and early 1930s. And he publishes an article in 1997 called Fascism, Borderless and Red. The red part means blood. It means a little bit of incorporation of Marxism. That's going to be a bloody, violent revolution that we need. And the borderless part is also there, that we need to expand Russia's border. We need to be expansionist. What we need is a kind of national socialism. And he takes the socialism seriously, economic control. But it's not going to be a socialism where we take, so to speak, the Russian people and we make them fit into some abstract socialist template. This is the fascist part. We need to take the Russian people, its particular ethnic identity, including its religion, its cultures, its traditions, see it as having a world historical destiny. It's going to lead the world to a new bright future that's not going to be trapped in the old Marxist way. And as you're suggesting, it's going to learn from the failures of the earlier versions of fascism. Correct. And National Socialism. And what that is going to involve is a willing to be muscular, a willing to be violent, a willing to take ethnicity and nationalism seriously, and not to compromise one jot. Jeez. With capitalism, with any form of Western liberalism. So yes, that's Dugin by the time we get to the late 1990s.
Let me tell you about realestateagentsitrust.com. Seems like just about everybody is an expert these days.
Where'd you get your real estate license?
I got it from the School of Hard Knocks, you know what I'm saying? I was working at the hot dog stand, and these people came after me, and now, I got my experience in hot dogs and your house.
You know, you might want to do a little more searching for a real estate agent, and here's the thing. I didn't even know how to find a good real estate agent. I don't know what questions to ask them, or I should say I didn't. Now, my company, realestateagentsitrust.com, after a lot of education and a lot of searching, we did find the people that you can trust in the real estate business. Not just people who know what they're doing, but the people you can actually put your trust in, and not just them. You can trust the people who they trust that are going to form a team that help bring everything together for your house, inspecting, mortgage consultants, home repair people, the whole kit and caboodle. As they used to say, God only knows when. Put a premium on trust. If that's you, go to realestateagentsitrust.com. Free service to you. I don't charge you anything for the recommendation. You do your own homework. See if you believe this is a person that's cut from the same cloth that you are and just wants a good deal all around. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. That's realestateagentsitrust.com. Now back to the podcast.
You are listening to the best of Glenn Beck. To listen to the rest of this interview, check out the full show podcast.
I want to go over this NPR boss, which was, you know, kind of funny at the beginning. And then the more you learn about her, the more you're like, hang on just a second. Because she would be a very important tool in the hands of the government, and she's being paid by National Public Radio. So she is a tool of the government in many ways. Can she separate herself from her own personal beliefs? Or is that even wanted at NPR? We wanted to bring in Joe McKinnon. Joe is a Blaze News staff writer, and he has been following up on this. Joe, take us from the beginning, from the whistleblower, if you will, all the way to Christopher Rufo, and then let's pick it up from there. So can you tell us the beginning of it, Joe?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. So Yuri Berliner, earlier this month, has this damning expose in the Free Press, April 9th. He goes after NPR after having worked there for a quarter of a century as a senior business editor. He suggests that there's zero viewpoint diversity, particularly after John Lansing, the former CEO, had made it an activist organization and then allied it effectively with the Democratic Party. This is a publication, according to Berliner, that didn't want to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story, that worked right with Adam Schiff to push the Russian collusion hoax. So he goes to town on NPR and draws the ire of someone who's not been on a lot of people's radar, and that's Catherine Mayer, or Meyer, I should say. So Meyer comes up with this long response and effectively cusses him out with some more charitable terms, and he subsequently, Berliner is suspended, and then he resigns. So people start looking into Meyer after this, because she was with Wikipedia before, but I guess, you know, flew under the radar for a lot, particularly on the right or among those who are critical of the government. And at first blush, she looks just like another shrill leftist. She has the obligatory photo wearing the Biden campaign hat, and she has an unhealthy obsession with race. And so that photo exists, and the tweets speak for themselves. But you keep digging as Rufo has, and you realize really quickly that there is something more going on here. From 30,000 feet, she looks like not just a tech-savvy media queen, but someone who spent a lot of time around color revolutions in the Orient, enough to know how they might be replicated.
Okay, so hang on just a second. Campuses and boardrooms are full of leftists, but you're saying, and Christopher Rufo is saying, she is not your ordinary leftist. She's been around color revolutions. What does that mean, she's been around color revolutions?
Okay, so, well, one of the many interesting posts she's had, and I should note at the outset here that she's a World Economic Forum World Global Leader. She's worked with the World Bank. She's worked with various NGOs that are in the tech, comms, and, foreign policy space. So around 2010, 2011, and Rufo chronicled her travel itinerary, she's with the National Democratic Institute. And that's a spinoff of the National Endowment for Democracy, committed to, well, you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
This is an organization that tries to transition unwilling regimes to become liberal democracies.
Now, can I redefine that a little bit? It's a CIA front.
Well, Mike Benz, he was in the Trump administration at the State Department. He said exactly that. He said it's a carve out for the CIA. And other people have said just as much. In fact, I think it was Ron Dixon at the New York Times back when he said the NDI was actively fomenting protests during the so-called Arab Spring. So,
Joe, we know this. I exposed that when we were at Fox. We've known that from the beginning. It didn't take a brain surgeon to figure this out. Then when you go into Ukraine and see what they were doing and the phrases that they were using, saying, you know, we can spread this now. We kind of perfected it in the Middle East and we can spread it. And that's exactly what we were doing in Ukraine.
Well, precisely. Ukraine, Libya, Egypt, Yemen, Tunisia. And so she's kind of done a pilgrimage to these toppled regimes, and in some cases as they're falling. So Rufo notes that she goes to Tunisia a couple times. She goes to Gaziantep in southern Turkey just as rebels are making inroads along the highway between Damascus and, I believe, it was Aleppo. And she actually said not long ago that she framed the timing differently, but she said in the aftermath of the revolutions, she was doing research on the ground with, quote unquote, human rights activists and independent journalists. And so she's with the NDI. She's going to Tunisia. And she raised a couple alarm bells. So there's this Tunisian cabinet official. And, he straight out said it's a likely case that she works for a certain three-letter agency. And, you know, a lot of people have been speculating about that in recent weeks.
So what is her background in broadcast and news?
Well, she deals a lot with comms. In terms of news, she's been critical of the ways that governments have weaponized their state broadcasters, which I think is rich, granted.
Right.
Progression
she does work
career.
For her. Yes. But what is she? I mean, does she have a background in news? Is she a journalist? I see that she's traveled the world, that she's with the World Bank and the WEF, and she's been with NGOs, and she's been around revolutions, but that doesn't necessarily scream CEO of NPR.
Well, I think Wikimedia and Wikipedia, which she ran the show for several years, she demonstrated her bona fides, and it was under her reign that it quickly became clear that this was, it's supposed to be a repository for human knowledge, right?
Right,
I know,
but it's not.
Recently you talked about how memory is the key to who we are. Well, Wikipedia is instrumental to capturing and curating that memory for a lot of people. So she might not be a journalist, but she was very much, well, I don't want to suggest there's a causation, but she pretends that, you know, the Wikipedia editors are working on their own. But while she's in control, there's very much a narrative curation going on, the kind that you might want at a taxpayer-funded state broadcast.
Jeez. Okay. So the rumor that she's with CIA, where did that originate?
So I mentioned she went to Tunisia a couple times, right?
Okay.
So this cabinet official is named Slim Mamou. I think I'm pronouncing that right. But Slim says in 2016, that it's a bit of a retrospective. He's looking back. And I believe it is around the time that she is getting a promotion over at Wikipedia. He straight up says she's probably CIA. He's not mincing words. He says she's come over under different affiliations with the NDI, with World Bank, with USAID. And he suggests, and this is going on at Twitter at the time, still called that, he suggests that she might as well have had CIA written on her front. And so Slim was in the transitional government. He dropped out to protest so-called censorship. And he, you know, not entirely the top of the food chain, but someone you might at least want to hear out. And so she is prickled by the suggestion. She responds saying, I'm no sort of agent. You can dislike me, but please don't defame me. But then, you know, that brought even more scrutiny because people took notice of the way she framed that response. So Christina Pasha, she's on the DeSantis team. She noted, for instance, okay, well, you may not have been an agent, but you could just as well have been an asset.
Yeah.
But the CIA element, I think, you know, I haven't seen any incontrovertible proof.
Sure.
It's also largely immaterial because she's actually directly worked with the Biden administration. She's worked with and brushed shoulders with all these regime change groups. So whether or not she has CIA on a card somewhere tucked to her desk, she might as well have been.
And this is part of the group that, I mean, Hillary Clinton, in that infamous clip where she said, "We came, we saw, he died," and laughed about it. I think who she was talking to at the time might have been Samantha Power, who is, you know, Cass Sunstein's wife, the author of Nudge, and somebody who knows how to nudge people into new positions. But Sam now works at USAID. She's the head of USAID. So if you have the head of NPR also working with Samantha Power at USAID, that is also a CIA front.
No, absolutely. And I think it was Michael Waller in the Rufo piece. He's a national security analyst. And he said he drew that same connection with Power and intimated that Meyer is part of this revolutionary vanguard movement. So, you know, they're all in bed together by the looks of it, I should say. A little bit of distance because I don't want a mean tweet. But and then you couple this with her public comments, and then it lends even more gravity to this, her becoming the head of NPR, which was announced.
Give me some of her public comments that I may not know.
Okay, well, I did a little bit of a deep dive. A lot of these already are circulating, but they're all troubling. So, for instance, in a 2021 interview, and this one has caught a lot of people's attention in recent days, she described the First Amendment as the top challenge in the fight against disinformation. So it's a challenge. Yeah, that's right. It's a challenge because, quote, it's a little bit tricky to really address some of the real challenges of where does bad information come from and sort of the influence peddlers who have made a real market economy around it. And by the way, when she's talking about disinformation, she means skepticism of COVID-19 vaccines, which I note in the lead up to the show, there was mentioned that AstraZeneca just admitted that it has devastating impact. Well, yeah, so that's disinformation, according to the former head of Wikipedia. She also, climate alarmism, that's a no-fly for her. So at an Atlantic Council 2021 event, she says, Wikipedia isn't a free expression platform. And so that, a lot of people are wondering why. And she suggests it's really about creating content that people can have confidence in, that they can use to make determinations in their lives. And so that right to have access to high-integrity content often sort of trumps the right to free speech. Now, pair that with the fact that she suggests straight out in a TED Talk that, quote, our reverence for the truth might be a distraction, and it's getting in the way of finding common ground and getting things done. So I don't know who that common ground belongs to, by the way, but it certainly isn't free people.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck podcast. Find more of this interview and other full episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
Sarah, I think we need the cannibal update. Do we have the cannibal update music? Because I have been very concerned about cannibalism ever since Joe Biden brought it up. And I thought, it's cannibalism, we all thought it was over. But then again, we all thought the Soviet Union was over, right? We thought that threat was over. Cannibalism is real. And it's on display. And it involves, well, let me show you. Here is Nancy Pelosi involved in cannibalism on MSNBC.
And Joe Biden is doing that. Created 9 million jobs in his term in office. Donald Trump has the worst record of job loss of any president. So we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine. And
I don't
he has
think
the worst.
That anybody can accuse me of that.
And we no, but and let me just say, as a Speaker of the House, we put forth a $3 trillion bill, $3 trillion of investment in communities and the rest, and that is stimulates the economy.
Now, I don't know which one is in the pot here, which one's eating the other, but they are eating each other. So cannibalism, another update coming soon, because it seems to be going around now. And that's a real problem. Now, let's do go to Colombia, because it was what happened there yesterday was definitely not an insurrection. Right, Stu?
Definitely not.
Nothing to see.
No insurrection there. No, not at all. That was just protesters, Glenn. Those are protesters peacefully protesting, mostly, in favor of the rapists and murderers in Hamas. That's all. That's all that was.
Okay. Well, let me show you some things that that happened. This is in a library in Virginia. I mean, listen to that noise. The librarian, her head exploded immediately. She was like, shh. There were riot police were there. They stormed and took over the library at the Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. And they continued to talk out loud, not in whispers. And it was not good. It was not good. Here is from UCLA, a Jewish student that is being blocked from using the main entrance.
I have my ID right here. I'm being blocked off, not by the security guard, but by you two. You three. Oh, look, they're making their burger while I'm going this way. Excuse me. This is what they do. Everybody, look at this. Look at this. I'm a UCLA student. I deserve to go here. We pay tuition. This is our school. And they're not letting me walk in. My class is over there. I want to use that entrance. Well, I can't take it. Will you let me go in? This could be over in a second. Just let me and my friends go in to class.
We're not engaging with that.
Then you can move. Will you move?
We're not engaging with that.
Okay, we're going.
We're not engaging.
I'm going in. I have my hands up.
His hands are up.
I'm not hurting them. That's what they do, everybody. You guys are promoting aggression. You guys are promoting hate. We're UCLA students. We deserve to be there.
True, but he's forgotten all the microaggressions. Stu, your thoughts?
Oh, well, I mean, I think we should give an award to the security guard who stands there and does absolutely nothing and allows them to block this person's progress as he's trying to go to class. That's just like, wow, you know, he should get a Hamas award. Congratulations to him. I mean, that's completely unbelievable that they're allowing this to go on. And it's happening in, you know, campus after campus after campus.
Did you see the latest polls that Americans are for Israel by, I think it's like 80%, something like that, for Israel?
I know. I was talking to somebody, they're like, oh, man, that's good to see. Because you do see in the media a lot of times it feels like, I don't know, this is like some close call. And Americans are like, what is it, 75-25 in favor of Israel over Hamas. And I said, that's terrible. 75% of people, Israel over Hamas? Not even like a hidden, oh, the Palestinian people or whatever they usually pitch. No, this is the actual recognized terrorist group was used in the poll. This should be 99-1. 75% sucks for that poll.
I guess I've just been beaten down so far. I'm just like, well, that's good. 12 people in America are still for the Jews. Just a little beaten down by it, you know?
Yeah, just
a little bit. Mm-hmm. Do you see what the University of Florida said yesterday? That they're not going to tolerate it. They are not a preschool. You know the rules. You break them, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I can't imagine living in that fascistic society of Florida. Can you imagine that? They hold you to the rules. You sign, you know, when you sign up for school, you read the rule book. You're breaking the rules, you're out. Where everywhere else, they're negotiating with these people, you know? And I just think negotiating with terrorists is such a smart idea. It's so today, you know, so open-minded, so woke, so great. So one of the I think it was Northwestern negotiated to have Palestinians, you know, come up and speak on campus. So they're gonna get some, I don't know, Hamas members. Why not? They did it with the Nazis. They literally did this exact same thing with the Nazis in the 1930s. Why should we expect a different outcome? It's the same kind of people, the same group of people. They're fine with that. Totally fine with that. By the way, Spielberg is now doing propaganda for Joe Biden. He's looking into ways. It's not propaganda. He's looking in ways to enhance the president's message and help that message get out, like Nancy Pelosi just did. I love that. She was shocked when somebody in the media turned around and said it was a pandemic. But that's what everybody says. Play that again. This is what everybody says to their television. When they hear that stat, everybody says that.
And Joe Biden is doing that, created 9 million jobs in his term in office. Donald Trump has the worst record of job loss of any president. So we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine.
And she doesn't have any real comeback for it.
No.
She has never been challenged on that.
She's literally stunned in that moment that someone would point out to her the most obvious thing in the world that every single voter understands. And this is showing up in the polls like crazy, that people don't even look at the pandemic as part of Trump's economy. They don't judge it that way. They look at it and they say, well, it was doing really well before this really terrible thing that happened. A lot of jobs were lost. And obviously, American people wound up coming back to work after it was over. And Biden's trying to take credit for all that. And what the most fascinating part about this is, if you're going to criticize Trump on his performance in the economy when it comes to the pandemic, you're going to hit him on the shutdowns, right? Like, he was in favor of the shutdowns early, which, okay, I think that's a fair criticism. Certainly from the right, it's a fair criticism. However, the Democrats supported every single one of those policies and tried to drag out the shutdowns for another year and a half after Trump stopped supporting them. So there's absolutely no argument whatsoever. Everybody knows, everyone remembers COVID-19. Everyone remembers the period. Everyone remembers being told they couldn't go to work anymore for a few months. Everybody remembers this. And the fact that they keep trying to pitch this is so insultingly stupid that Katie Tour can't even let it happen on MSNBC. And she's called
Katie
a Trump
Tour
apologist
not-
for it.
Yeah, she's just Katie Tour. She's not a conservative.
No.
She's not even anywhere close to that.
She can't stand Donald Trump. She can't stand
no.
him. She's just she's
fair is not even a word.
She's embarrassed right. by the point that Nancy Pelosi is making. She feels yes. the internal pull to she has to point it out. It's such a stupid point. And I feel like I actually, Glenn, have a bit of sympathy for certain Democrats in these moments. Where like, you know, Katie Tour, who's obviously no conservative, is like, what do you mean a Trump apologist? Look at my record. I've done nothing but bash Trump for years and years and years and years. The same thing with Joe Biden. He's being criticized as Genocide Joe. He's done so much to hurt the Jews. Why are you? He's done so much to ruin their ability
really
to kill terrorists and stop their people from being raped. He's done so much. He's contributed so much to this cause, and these protesters won't give him credit for it.
I personally think that this is Genocide Joe. It's better to call him Genocide Joe from our side than their side.
Mm.
He's been funding the Iranians who want a genocide on all the Jews.
Yes.
I mean, he is Genocide Joe. They're just mixed up on who he wants to help kill. By the way, this is what you would call propaganda. What happened on MSNBC with Nancy Pelosi is propaganda. And she was shocked that there was somebody supposedly on her side that would not play the game. I don't know if you saw the OnlyFans star, Farah Khalidi. Do we have the audio of her? She was yesterday doing an interview, and she is, you know, she's a big influencer on TikTok. And here's what she talked about.
I started TikTok like the spring semester of my senior year, and I was like, I finally have to start applying for law school. And then like, you know, female privilege, life is so easy for a, you know, woman. Obviously, I lucked out. I'm just kidding. I lucked out. And then, you know, TikTok was basically full time for me. And like, I was taking ads by the time I graduated college from like the Biden administration and Planned Parenthood and like dating apps and stuff. So it was like fully financially, you know, sustainable.
So you were getting the Biden administration was buying ads from you?
Yeah, I was doing full on political propaganda.
And they would just say, oh, really? With like what kind of like Biden created 10 million jobs this year.
Yeah, honestly. And the funny thing is they're like, do not disclose this is an ad because, you know, they're like, technically it's not a product. So you don't have to disclose it's an ad. Because I think they just wanted like some edgy girl of color to just tell people. Like when they nominated like Ketanji Brown Jackson, they're like, you say like as a person of color, you know, that you feel reflected? And it's like a white woman emailing this to me. And she's like giving me this script. And I'm like, no. And she's like, please. And I'm like, no, I'll like talk about the news of it, but I'm not going to be like, I'm not going to have a white person tell me to be like, you know, this is how I feel as a person of color. Like, it's just so, I think that blackballed me slightly on like, you know, political propaganda.
So the Biden administration sees, oh, here's this young.
Yeah. I mean, they use like a conduit. It's not like, you know what I mean? It's not Biden, but it's like a third party. You know what I mean? It's like a media company that's doing it on his behalf. I'm not blaming him for this.
Yeah. And the message is like, because you're a dark-skinned woman, you will be inspired by Ketanji Brown Jackson and all the kids should support her.
Yeah, they're like, basically as like another black person, just say that like you feel reflected by Ketanji. I'm like, no, I'll talk about like Ketanji's background and her accomplishments, but like I never, you know what I mean? Like I'm not going to say like the corny stuff. Even if it was a brown person emailing it to me, I'm like, no, that's not like how I feel. Like I don't look at like Ketanji and feel like, wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what caught me there was it's not officially a product, so you don't have to disclose that it's an ad. First of all,
I don't know if that's true, by the way.
Yeah. First of all, I don't think that's true. Mm-hmm. Second of all, notice that she went along with it. She said, well, yeah, but I'm not going to say the things they wanted me to say. I'll talk about those things, but I'm not. Well, no, you're still engaged in what you know to be propaganda. And you were fine with that. Does anybody feel betrayed? Is anybody worried? Where is the precious news media? Can you imagine if I were doing that and Donald Trump, through surrogates, was paying me to talk about certain things that he had done? And then wanted me to say, you know, and I really feel validated by this. I really do. Because, you know, he likes white people. And I'm a white person. And so I really feel validated by that. And I didn't tell you that he was paying me to say that. It's grotesque for me to say that even if he weren't paying me. But if he's paying me and I don't tell you, what is wrong with our country?
It's amazing. If you can't trust Farha Khalidi,
who can you trust?
Who can you trust?
Who you can know? You trust? Well, I mean, what's the difference between what Steven Spielberg is now doing for the White House? Spielberg is now helping him orchestrate propaganda and orchestrate, you know, how to lie to the American people and pull it off. What is the difference? Does nobody on the left care about the truth anymore? I think the average Democrat does care about the truth, but the left certainly doesn't. You know, today is a great day to get a warranty. Actually, any day is a great day when you're not worrying about your appliances and home systems. That's what you get with an American Home Shield warranty. All the unexpected breakdowns, like a leaky faucet or faulty water heater, they're not going to break the bank because covered repairs and replacements are all taken care of. Having reassurance is something to celebrate. Choose the plan that works for you and your budget. When a covered item in your home breaks, all you do is contact American Home Shield. Their trusted, qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage limits in your agreement. When it comes to protecting your appliances and home systems, don't worry. Be warranty. Go to ahs.com/Beck and save 20%. That's ahs.com/Beck and get 20% off any plan.
See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home builder or manufacturer.